Yes, thank you. Thank you, Vanessa. It's a wonderful event and wonderful organization. Thanks also to people who are not here, like Valentin, who really helps to make this event possible. So we, I and Flori are both researchers in design. So today we will talk about the art and design point of view of these questions. First, who we are and where do we speak? I'm happy to come back to Nice. I went here 4 years ago already for a talk about AI. And my school is located in Geneva. It's around 800 students, and I manage a lot of research from the pedagogical staff in several fields, such as interior design, visual arts, fashion design, graphic design, and so on.
Yeah, so me, I'm a currently student in a Master of Design in ANS Paris-Saclay, which is a school teaching works of research and higher education to students.
I also manage a research journal called Back Office, dedicated to graphic design and digital technology relationships. The last issue was released some months ago about Swedi. And these are our main questions for today. First, we will wonder what can art and design contribute to philosophical and ethical issues surrounding AI? That's a big question. And maybe a more provocative question, Vanessa and the others. Can we do ethics by design without design? We will try to answer this question.
How do you define design?
Yes, we will define design to answer this. That's the next part. How can we define design? That's quite complicated because these words have a very different meaning in English and in French. And we are speaking English, so. In English, it means a very broad sense and maybe difficult to understand. Planning, programming, ruse, or perfidy. It's quite negative if we refer to the writings of the media theorist Wilhelm Flusser. In French, it's quite different. It's a kind of blend of the Italian disegno. It's a word from the Renaissance. The encyclopédie dessin, but, goal, we can say. And also the English meaning of design. So it's quite complicated. And in French, we also have the burden of the art décoratif and also applied art, which has two different stories. And so still today, most of the people in France doesn't know how to define or understand design. Also, there is design and design with a S. So when we speak about design in English or in the other countries, in fact, we are speaking in, about a lot of different fields, such as product design, graphic design, interaction design, and so on. And more close than us, service design, critical design, or speculative design. I will not have the time to define these new fields, but we can, you can refer, for example, to that very interesting book, The Toaster Project, where the designer Thomas Thwaites tried to build a toaster by itself. Spoiler, it fails, but it's all of his trying are on the book, and it shows that it's very difficult today to build a kind of dumb object like a toaster without a factory behind. Two quotations, maybe I will only read the first one. To understand that design is much more than aesthetics or shaping things. Catherine Gell, who is a researcher in design, defined design as solving in design does not mean settling a question, still less dissolving or eliminating a problem, since technical progress renews and poses them afresh, engaging new means for their resolution. It's a matter of trying each time to approach sensitive and perceptible equation of its resolution. So design, in short, is not a way to only solve questions, but also to raise new questions. That's very important to understand. Definition of AI may be more easy for you, but in fact, it's quite difficult because when we talk about AI today, we only refer to a very small part of a much long time field. Here it's a kind of timeline of AI with two main schools, connectionist and symbolic. I will not dig into this. And it's difficult to define and understand today. There is a lot of misinformation. And in fact, what we call AI today, it's only a part of a much broader field. And essentially, we speak about deep learning or machine learning technologies, which are only a small part of that field. So we have to be careful. On our talk, we will mostly speak about a research project I did in Geneva called Design and Machine Learning, run with two colleagues of my school. Our research questions were to investigate how can AI be reoriented on a smaller scale in a tailored way, because when we speak about design and AI, we mostly refers to big tech and high tech, which is a problem for artists and designers who often works by themselves or in very small team, like two or three people, if we talk about graphic design. How can we ensure that AI increase invention and curiosity and not the opposite, which is often the case? And how could design contribute to counter the dominant and capitalistic culture of AI? It's very important because most of the time design is seen as capitalistic, which is true, but it's not only the case. And we can think of a more open way to think and doing things. I wrote a book which was published some months ago. It's released on several formats, print, HTML, PDF, also audio, if you don't like to read, and both in French and English. And some of our slides are taken from that book. Also, our talk is based on a state of art Flori and I did some months ago, and I let the floor to Flori to explain the process.
Yes, thank you, Antoine. Say yes. As you said, AI is still very complicated to define what is AI and how AI is impacting our life. So that's why we started the state of art with Anthony last April, in order to so this state of art is available on his website on the blog tab, so you can just have access to it. And because the goal was to gather and analyze different kind of sources, so we analyze podcasts, YouTube videos, articles, which explain the AI field in order to summarize and make it more understandable for people, because it's a subject which still is still very opaque and very blur for many people. So it was a work of outreaching and communication on this subject for the vast majority. And also, AI is a technology that evolves fastly, and especially these last few years. So every week, every month, we have new discoveries, we have new theses, we have new controversies about AI. So that's why we thought it was very important, and it was kind of something very important to do. And this point, the point that I just said before, that led us to start so the state of art, which we are still working on. So it's always evolving. And the main goal was to try to go further than the first naive vision we can have on these technologies, in order to better apprehend them and in a better way also.
Last definition, democracy, will not define pedagogy. Democracy, it's a very old concept, of course. We will only based our purpose to Jacques Rancière, the philosopher, work on this book, A Trade of Democracy, was translated in English. And he said on that book, he defined democracy as the action of subjects who, by working the interval between identities, reconfigure the distributions of the public and the private, the universal and the particular. And on another interview, he said the democratic principle is the affirmation of the power of all, the power of human beings without qualities, which charts the normal distribution of power between the social powers, embodying a title to govern, birth, wealth, science, and so on. Democracy is therefore linked to a limitation of the power of property. So if we based our definition on this, we can understand that we have a big problem with AI, because the AI is mostly private and governed by big tech. So there is a yes, we have to think about it. And he said at the end, democracy is alive and well wherever it's able to exercise this limitation. That's why our next part is about AI and risks or new risks for democracy. Most of them are were already quoted or listed by the previous speakers on that event. So, first one, Florie.
Yeah, so we have a first point about the ownership and sovereignty. So because we have usually two opposing main views on AI that emerge. So one is more like AI as a killer of humanity. And this point of view is usually more from the left political part. Some more socialism and some more left camp. And another vision is more about AI as something that can augment human. So this is usually a vision underlined by the high-tech giants, by the neoliberalism companies. And so this political division is very important to analyze, because so as I said, in the left part, there are, the left part is more concerned about the takeover of AI by the big tech companies, and on the other hand is the right part, which is seeing AI as an augmentation of men. So we can see that it's something very extreme point of view, and we need to maybe create more debate and to equilibrate this. And because, for example, in one part, the political left propose usually a vision of democracy outside the contemporary technical framework. So in short, by rejecting these technologies, the left wants to avoid the creation of what we call two-speed system, which means a competition between the public service and the private service, and so in which the digital divide is intensified. So that's why, as I said before, we really need to balance the debates. So rejecting AI is not a solution, because it's impossible anyway, because AI is implemented everywhere and without our prior consensus. So we can think about face tracking, about chatbot is everywhere. And also, so that's why we think it's more important to learn and to teach how to use them and how to regulate also their use. And also, so that's why it's very important to create kind of better AI legislation with more safeguards, with controls and laws applicable to private industries also by the government. And there is a notion which is very, I think, interesting. This is the notion of tyranny of delay, tyranny du retard, that Dominique Boulier is analyzing. So this notion drives the dynamics of domination and competition between countries, so an oppressive system widening digital divides. And also we might think about the new cold war between the two big countries, so USA and China, as we can see here on this illustration. And as Tariq Krim also analyzed, so the USA and the China are the two major players in the field of AI, actually, because this both countries sees AI as a key technology for the future, with potential application in many different fields, including defense, economic, and medicine, and more. So we understand there is a technological rivalry between the USA and China when it comes to AI, because both countries are investing heavily in AI research and development, so seeking to take the lead in the field and develop strategic application on security, for example, with military use, with cyber defense, also about the creation of private life with tracking of mass surveillance. And also another point is the censorship, of course, with AI, and the freedom of speech and the limits imposed by political regimes on AI technologies. So, for example, it's still very hard, even impossible, to generate image of the president Xi Jinping. So few could do it, but it requires also a knowledge on the prompting. So this question also the question of freedom with AI.
And here we see the Winnie the Pooh, like James just said.
Yeah, and so another political issue is, of course, the face tracking danger for the stability of the democracy, because expanding the use of deepfakes would kind of undermine the citizens, or the citizens already limited trust in the democratic institution. So there is also a very big issue on this point. Yeah, another big issue is discriminatory behaviors. So, because algorithmic neutrality doesn't exist, the AI is just doing a repetition of our discriminatory systems. We have also linguistic discrimination because English is virtually systematic also. And also there is a racial discrimination because AIs are driven by a dominant class of usually a white man, American class, and therefore have a stronger hold on AI output. So we have a little diversity. It was already the case in 2015 with Google, who classified black people as gorillas. So it's not a new problem, this discriminatory behaviors with AI, also the transphobic behaviors of AI. So,
but it's not solved yet, such as this example.
This was in July 2023, so we can see it's not new and still many problems with this AI discriminatory behaviors. And so we have found many examples about, for example, terrorism, about also, this one is very strong. The hyping of occupation is mostly white person, white men. And on the other end, the low-paying occupation, you can see, is minority people, such as Asian people or Latinos people, so which shows a very big issue on this point.
Yeah, and on the contrary, the architects are all men and white, of course. And you can speak about
and
this.
Also another point is also there is a misogynic also problem with AI, because, for example, as you can see here, there is on the different job, we can see the proportion of women is usually in the high-paying occupation is very, very low, and on the representation of AI, so which shows also that AI is reproducing the misogynic behaviors of humans and still reproducing our system, and which is a big problem.
Yeah, and on a closer sense, AI reinforce or build new stereotypes. Here, if you ask, I don't know which, maybe Midjourney, I'm not sure, or Stable Diffusion, to generate an official photograph of a member of Congress, US Congress, holding a cat or a gun, you can't have only white men. Maybe on a less intriguous or dangerous way, but we can discuss. Microsoft works with a bank to build the new Rembrandt, and many papers at the time wonders if AI could replace artists. But in a way, it's very reactionary because it only imitates the past, and it's like on the 18th century where the salon only accept work of art who respect very strict rules. So the whole contemporary or modern story of art argue the opposite. So it's a very old way to see art. AI could be used to reveal cultural patterns, such as on this example of the Roby Barat artist who trained an AI dataset to generate new Balenciaga clothes on 2018, or the designer Etienne Miner, who works with students to dig into the story of design with the use of a card play. Proletarianization, I think we not enough talk about this today and yesterday, because AI, of course, it's not magical at all. It's not only based on machines or on materials. It requires a lot of human task force, not occidental, often located on South Asia or South Africa. And Antonio Casilli, the sociologue, calls them proletarians of the clique. And it's not only a step, as we could think. So it's a step, and after it will disappear. It seems that it will remains mandatory in the future. It's false to say that AI it doesn't involve body, but it doesn't involve occidental body, which is not the same. It's a very fascinating works of the designers and researchers Kate Crawford and Vadan Joller, Anatomy of an AI System, where they dissect the functioning of the Amazon Echo Speaker, who requires a lot of very rare minerals, often located on country or on wars, and human task force and so on. So be careful when you speak about AI, that it's a very complex ecosystem required to make them work.
Yes, and also a very important things to understand with AI is that AIs are non-semantic, so they don't grasp the meaning of what they are actually saying. So this is, and therefore they generate like problems, outcomes, change. AI is therefore lack of intersubjectivity, and also semantic and ontology, and as you can read in this quote, AI is more like amplified. Is more like amplified the real, because with the Turing test challenge, our understanding of reality and intelligence and how it paves the way for a world where the distinction between human and machines become blurred. It invites us to reflect on the potential transformation that AI can bring to our conception of the world and of the reality. So there is a very dangerous tautological aspect with AI, because it's something that just repeating in many different ways the same thing. We also might think about the notion of stochastic parrot, which is an effect that four researchers from Google analyzed in the scientific article on the danger of stochastic parrots. Can language models be too big? So yeah, about the non-semantic speeches, it's a recurring topic in the AI discussion, and this evokes also a dichotomy between the genuine understanding and the superficial cleverness, to give us the illusion that he or she is speaking to human. The world remains elusive for AIs who cannot produce original, explainable, reliable, and meaningful output. And this is a very big problem. So AI is unable to anchor itself in the human world, and resulting in a lot of inaccurate text, for example.
Yeah, and even if it's not semantic, we try to make it human or see it as human. Can go on.
Yeah. So, and with this point, so one of the big problems is the mystification and so the anthropomorphization of AI by projecting and doing a strong identification with AI. We can understand that it's very dangerous, because it gives this technology a kind of aura, a humanity that it does not have. AIs are developed to adapt to user and a user's profile and expectation. AIs are capable of simulating the human behavior to deceive users and make them believe in the emotionality of these machines, which of course doesn't exist. So the machine disappears in the favor of assistants, coaches, playful and kind of sympathetic companions. Under no circumstances should AI be allowed to exercise free will. We shouldn't give them too much roles in our infrastructures, as they can quickly become uncontrollable. And yeah, we have many AI about religion that exist. You can just trying to find any religions. There is AI about this for Bible, for Torah, we take the example of a GPT, so developed by Google Indian Research Scientific, based on the Bhagavad Gita, so the fundamental text of Hinduism, and the expert warned on the potential danger of these religious AIs, of course, because particularly when they may adopt misogynistic attitudes or insight to violence against those who do not follow the religious principles. So as a result, the individuals may place excessive trust in this system and be exposed to discriminatory speeches. And also thereby, there is another point also. There is also maybe the question of individual responsibility, which is major also issues in the use of this AI. So maybe each person have to, when they use AI, think about more, about trying to think and know that it's only a machine, and so to not put too much trust on this technology.
Yeah, and also with Flori, we begin to list a lot of academic lectures who use anthropomorphic robots. Mm-hmm. So we will maybe do an Instagram account about this. There is a lot, to be short. So it's a problem because we confer to the machine the aspect of a human where it's only good for now.
It extends the idea that AI is kind of mechanic human and AI is just code and algorithm. So this is
We propose to call it AI kitsch.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we didn't see a lot of this and maybe not that kind of picture since yesterday. So thanks to all. Also privacy issues, there are a lot, of course. Every time you interact with ChatGPT or an AI speaker, your data are used to improve that kind of system, and they can be resold or used. There was a big problem for Samsung because some engineers from Samsung filled ChatGPT with private data, and other people were able to get this data by using ChatGPT, because at the end it was mixed with other data. And also the surveillance issues, Flori already spoke about this, for example in China, but not only in China, unfortunately. Copyright issues, it's mostly a law problem, so we will not dig into this, but keep in mind that a lot of data sets use materials who are released under copyrights, and there is a lot of legal cases still open by artists, and not only artists, could be writers and so on, who feel robbed or even dispossessed of their work. And there is not yet a kind of jurisprudence, it's still an open process. Second half of our presentation will be about pedagogy of or with AI to increase democracy after this very bad insights. First, how can we explain AI? Flori.
So AI should not be understood as a replacement system, but rather as what Nicolas Nova is saying, a displacement and a reconfiguration urban forms of partial task automation. So we need to question the acquisition of skills and get to know these new tools. So consider maybe them as a new know-how to better grasp their weakness and their benefits. And this raises the question about the pedagogical methods used to teach these technologies. So we just might think quickly about the AI 40 project, which is a project launched by the five European countries in order to, for 3 years, experiment project with AI in education.
Yes, at my school at Tel Genève, I'm just beginning to work on a guide of pedagogical exercises to be done with AI. So if you are interested, we can keep in touch. Mm-hmm. It just started and it's funded by our rectorat. We are also a problem of how can we visualizing or understanding AI, because if you use only text, it's not understandable at all. So I will show to you an example of blockchain technologies who have the same problem. It's very opaque and so on. Recently I finished a research project also funded by my rectorat in Geneva. And we wanted to build a visual guide of blockchain technologies. So we designed a set of more than 200 pictograms to explain these technologies. Here you have an extract on this, and I will show you a video. I think it will work. Yes. Do we have some sound?
Le projet Quelques Clics a pour origine un cycle de conférences que j'ai pu organiser à Paris en 2017-2018 qui s'appelait New Kids of the Blockchain et qui traitait des enjeux créatifs de ces technologies. Ce qui n'était pas évident à l'époque. Et c'est dans ce contexte qu'avec Guillaume, on a commencé à travailler sur des enjeux didactiques.
Dans le cadre de ce cycle, on devait évidemment représenter les technologies blockchain à travers des schématisations et ce qui a été, on va dire, le point de départ du projet qui est né quelques années plus tard.
Et donc, suite à ce cycle de conférences New Kids on the Blockchain, avec Guillaume, on a commencé à donner des cours, que ce soit à l'Université de Toulouse ou à Sciences Po Paris sur ces sujets, avec toujours le même problème de représentation.
Il est vrai que ces technologies peuvent sembler illégitimes au sein d'une école d'art, et ce point-là nous a semblé important avec Anthony pour justement le renforcer et le développer à l'intérieur de la HED.
Par ce projet, on voulait montrer que des designers et artistes peuvent avoir une voix, un rôle et un point de vue singulier sur ces technologies. Et c'est ce qu'on a mis au centre de ce projet de recherche et qui est destiné à l'ensemble du corps enseignant, donc pas uniquement les métiers de l'art et du design. On a vraiment pensé ce projet dans une approche didactique interdomaine et transdisciplinaire.
Une des deuxièmes complexités, ça a été évidemment de traduire, on va dire, des technologies ou des ensembles technologiques extrêmement complexes à travers un graphisme particulier. Pour ça, il fallait avant tout déconstruire les termes. La terminologie des mots était souvent très complexe. Et le travail, c'était avant tout de dire mais sur quelle définition on va se baser pour après construire, on va dire, une représentation assez objective.
Le projet a initialement été conçu à l'intention de la communauté enseignante des hautes écoles, pas seulement les champs de l'art et du design.
Mais on a également voulu s'adresser, et c'est un des enjeux du projet, à un public beaucoup plus professionnel, c'est-à-dire le monde vraiment de la crypto et le monde de la blockchain, en leur proposant et leur montrant ce qu'il est possible de faire avec ces technologies-là, au-delà d'un simple aspect financier, et de leur dire que voilà, l'art, le graphisme, a également sa part.
Dans le projet CryptoKit, on voulait vraiment que la partie visuelle soit poussée au maximum, et pour ça, n'ayant pas les compétences suffisantes avec Guillaume, on a contacté Océane Dubin, qui est typographe, dessinatrice de caractères, spécialisée dans le dessin de pictogrammes et de représentations complexes, pour être capable de représenter les concepts clés de la blockchain sous forme visuelle.
Il était important pour nous de dessiner des pictogrammes explicites qui soient suffisamment compréhensibles par des personnes non initiées. C'était important pour nous de ne pas aller dans le sens des multiples métaphores visuelles qui sont utilisées pour représenter les composantes des technologies blockchain. J'ai dessiné les pictogrammes de CryptoKit en cohérence avec la famille typographique IBMPlex, qui contient une large palette de styles typographiques et permet aussi de composer dans un grand nombre de langues. J'ai dessiné 160 pictogrammes qui représentent les composantes des technologies blockchain, qui sont accompagnées de 160 connecteurs qui permettent de composer des schémas plus complexes.
Le livrable principal du projet est un site web, cryptokit.ch, qui a été conçu par les designers Elise Jay et Kevin Dono. Le site s'ouvre sur une mind map interactive qui est connectée à un site web didactique. On peut cliquer sur n'importe quel terme mis en couleur pour se déplacer dans la carte. Également, une page qui permet à n'importe qui de composer et de télécharger ses propres diagrammes. Et on a tous les éléments du kit qui sont en libre téléchargement et placés sous licence libre CC0.
En plus de ce site web, on va retrouver un poster qui met en place une sorte de cartographie lexicale de toutes les terminologies qu'on retrouve dans les technologies blockchain, qui va après pouvoir se décliner d'une manière narrative à travers un livret qui va pouvoir raconter cette histoire de la blockchain.
Ce sont des éléments qu'on va pouvoir placer dans des salles de cours, distribuer en conférence, afin d'expliquer le plus largement possible ces technologies complexes.
Un des points qui nous semble toujours très important avec Anthony a été évidemment de s'inscrire dans cette culture, on va dire Cypherpunk, en rendant le projet intégralement public et gratuit à travers une catégorisation du domaine public. Pour la quasi-intégralité du projet.
En conclusion, je dirais que ce projet, au-delà de la blockchain, propose une méthodologie d'analyse visuelle qui peut s'appliquer à d'autres domaines, et on aimerait la poursuivre dans les prochains mois sur l'intelligence artificielle, qui a les mêmes problèmes de représentation, de biais, d'incompréhension, et on espère qu'une cartographie visuelle de ces technologies permettrait de répondre à ces problèmes.
We have only 10 minutes to finish. So if you are interested to work on that kind of method for AI, please keep in touch with me. Also with colleagues in Geneva, we want to build a legal design lab with the Digital Law Center of University of Geneva and the Gradet Institute, the Sciences Po of Geneva. So to empower citizens and non-governmental organization, because their organization itself is very difficult to understand, such as UNESCO, maybe, I'm not sure. Also, what AI? How can we improve democracy with AI? We can invent new kind of collaboration. I will not have the time to show you a demo of that website, but every part of this website could be augmented with ChatGPT. It's my essay, Design and Machine Learning. And every paragraph, every sentence, every word could be augmented with ChatGPT in real time. So it's a kind of new hybridization. And to promote my book, my own book, two designers, Elise Gay and Kevin Dono, invented a kind of new communication campaign thanks to a series of five posters made in collaboration with DaVinci, a clone of ChatGPT, and 3D AI. So they ask DaVinci to... can they do a communication campaign, and it answers with five objects, such as a Rubik's Cube, a brain, a book, a robot, and some gears. And they show on these posters the dialogue between human and machine and the results of this dialogue. So there is also a 3D clip, but I will not have the time to show you. Also, when we talk about AI, as I talked at the very beginning of this presentation, we talk only about deep learning, but if we replace AI in the very larger area, we can mix different era of AI. We try to do this at my school with a workshop called Thinking Machines, where we connect connectionist and symbolic AI, and also some codes who are not AI at all, to invent a kind of new workflow to design books. Sorry, I will not have the time to dig into this. Also, we can scrap a different kind of data. Here, it's a very fascinating work where two designers scrap both Chinese data from Alibaba, the Chinese Amazon, and kind of data from the Nordic design, such as IKEA, to invent kind of new hybrid object, such as this candlestick to charge your mobile phones. We can also develop non-anthropomorphic AI. It's very important to escape from the kitsch robots. Here, the same designers are working on AI who can train on old people or on humans, of course, or on plants or planets to create a non-human kind of intelligence. So it's related to a lot of contemporary theory related to the Anthropocene and the limits of human. We can also build custom datasets. It's very important to escape from big tech. We have a very new research project about this at my school, run by my colleague Alexia Mathieu, called DataCraft, where she will investigate the potential of datasets produced by artists and designers based on their own work in a closed and custom way to escape from the stereotypes and a lot of biases we just speak before. So wrap up. At my school, we have a kind of AI action plan. Sorry for the sound. Based on several actions, first a new course in bachelor, then a lot of research projects, state of art. Flori already spoke about this. Continuing education. If you want to improve yourself about AI, please join this 1 week program. Also, we will have a big symposium at the end of April at Geneva about AI and design and art relationships. Conclusion, I will not escape this question. Can we do ethics by design without design? It depends, but I think that ethics by design will benefit from understanding design in a broader sense than conception. Vanessa, on your talk yesterday, you spoke about formalism and how can we embed moral principles. So it's important, but we can use design to explain previous things, but use design to raise new questions, which is, I think, more interesting. And the implementation of ethics by design remains open, because when we speak, we want to improve democracy, we want to explain, okay, but and when we try to answer about the how, it raises new questions because it's very complicated, such as the example of blockchain. We work, it took more than 1 year to build this, work. So not just explain top-down, which is important, but co-design in a more dialogical way. And this will be our last slide. Art and design have the power to ask new questions in the forward-looking way. If we look into the very long history of art, we can see a lot of examples, such as, for example, in the clonage. There are a lot of examples. And if you are interested, let's build together an international legal design lab between France, Switzerland, Canada, and the US. Thank you very much, and we are looking forward for your remarks and questions.